You know, you don't have to vote anymore. Save your vote for the general election.
What?
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling that something ain't right. I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yep.
Yes, I'm stuck in the middle with you.
From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA. In Oregon on 91.7 FM KYAQ on the Central Coast and 106.7 FM KSO in Cottage Grove. Out in Pennsylvania on 93 FM WLRI in Lancaster. In Hawaii on 88.5 FM KAKU, the voice of Maui. In Ohio, the Buckeye State WGRN 94.1 FM in Columbus. And up in Minneapolis, St. Paul, on AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Also coast to coast and around the globe, streaming on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Indie Media Weekly, FYI Nation, Radio or Not, Radio Free Brooklyn, GDPR Nashville, Detour Talk in East Tennessee, and Blanketing Planet Earth. 5 days a week on Radio Sputnik. I am Brad Friedman. Your friendly independent blogger, journalist, investigator, muckraker, troublemaker, and all-around swell fellow says me from bradblog.com. Thank you for joining us today. Always glad to have you with us, especially as voters once again, yes, they once again head to the polls today, no matter what Donald Trump there tells you, in West Virginia and in Nebraska for another presidential primary. We'll have full results of that tomorrow, whatever those results may be. And in West Virginia, of course, we'll have no idea if the results are correct. We will never know if the results are correct because so much of West Virginia uses 100% unverifiable touchscreen voting system. So don't be surprised if you hear about votes flipping and everything else that we've been telling you about, warning you about for the past 10 years. They're still doing that in West Virginia because they hate their voters so much. But you know who hates the voters in West Virginia even more than the election officials who make them use those unverifiable touchscreen systems? Donald Trump is apparently no fan of the West Virginia voters.
Now that Donald Trump is the presumptive GOP nominee, tomorrow's West Virginia primary is not exactly crucial. But that did not stop him from holding a rally there on Thursday to remind everyone of their important role in the democratic process.
You know, you don't have to vote anymore. Save your vote for the general election, okay? Forget this one. The primary's gone.
Yes. It's an inspiring message. It reminds me of Patrick Henry's immortal battle cry, give me liberty or don't. Forget this one. I don't give a crap. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Well, Donald Trump may not give a crap, but I suspect both Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton do as they continue to compete in that presidential primary. Also in Nebraska, as I said, they're voting as well, but it's Republicans only, Republican-only primary today. Ted Cruz, interestingly enough, he just can't quit this presidential election. He was on Glenn Beck on Tuesday, and Beck asked Ted Cruz if he would consider getting back in the race if he wins Tuesday's primary in Nebraska. The Texas senator told Beck that he would, quote, respond accordingly if, again, he sees a, quote, path to victory. Cruz also dismissed calls for a third-party candidate as an alternative to Trump. He said, I don't think that's very likely. Well, about as likely as Ted Cruz getting back in the race, I suspect, or perhaps more likely than that. As I say, we'll have those results tomorrow. Coming up in a little bit, Desi Doyen and the Green News Report with... What does this is one of those reports that just kind of blows my mind when it comes to climate change denialism. The things that you're going to cover in today's report and the fact that you have guys, well, actually the presumptive nominee of the Republican Party, Donald Trump, still calling climate change a hoax.
Yes, it's kind of shocking in this day and age, but this is what the American media has led us to today.
We must be careful to not let Donald Trump hear the upcoming Green News report because he may then have second thoughts, you know, because it's got facts and stuff in it.
No danger of that.
Would hate that to happen. Yeah. Also, what would you say if we knew how to save the lives of 500,000 Americans a year, 500,000 Americans, but the Republican Party was actively, purposely working to stop that from happening, even though we knew we could save 500,000 Americans a year, but the Republican Party was stopping it? What would you say? Okay, now what would you say if Democrats were the ones stopping it? Well, I take no joy in saying so, but they are. We will discuss that with my guest shortly. Be prepared to be at least half as angry as it makes me, and it really does. All right, U.S. is not the only ones having elections, of course, this year. Sadiq Khan, 45-year-old, was declared the new mayor of London in the early hours of Saturday. He became the most powerful Muslim politician in Europe ever. Well, at least in recent history. He's a transport minister in the Labour government of former Prime Minister Gordon Brown, and Khan came under severe attack during his campaign from his conservative opponent, Zach Goldsmith, for sharing platforms with extremists, as Time magazine reports it, during his earlier career as a human rights lawyer. But they had an interview with Sadiq Khan. This is huge news that a Muslim has now become the mayor of London. And Sadiq Khan was asked about the conservatives that he had accused of using a Donald Trump playbook against him. Time magazine said, what's your view on a potential Trump presidency given his remarks on Muslims? His response, clearly, he said, I'll visit the U.S. before January in case Donald Trump wins. He said, hope, I think, is a good way of persuading people and enthusing people. I think to try and look for differences, to try and turn communities against each other is not conducive to living successfully and amicably. He said, I think Bill de Blasio is doing interesting housing stuff in New York. Rahm Emanuel is doing interesting stuff with Infrastructure Bank in Chicago. He said, I want to go to America to meet with them and engage with American mayors. If Donald Trump becomes the president, I'll be stopped from going there by virtue of my faith, which means I can't engage with American mayors and swap ideas. Conservative tacticians thought those sorts of tactics would win London, and they were wrong. I'm confident that Donald Trump's approach to politics won't win in America. Sadiq Khan may be a bit more confident than I am.
And me as well. Yeah, I was thinking exactly the same thing.
And there's good reason to not be quite so confident. In the Philippines, they also held an election. This was an election held on Monday, where a brash and tough-talking mayor who has pledged to kill suspected criminals and end crime within 6 months looks like he is now set to become the next president of the Philippines. He has taken an unassailable lead in the unofficial vote count in the Monday election. And in the vice presidential race there, the son of the late dictator Ferdinand Marcos now has a narrow lead in that race. But on the president's race, Rodrigo Duterte, the mayor of the southern Davao City, has secured more than 14.4 million votes. According to the count now in, 87% of precincts. His closest rival had just 8.6 million votes. So it looks like Duterte is in. Now, who is Duterte, Rodrigo Duterte? Well, he has a reputation for fighting crime as mayor of Davao for 22 years, but he's been accused of ordering extrajudicial killings to achieve that. And on the last day of campaigning on Saturday, he made clear that he intends to continue that approach. Quote, all of you who are into drugs, you sons of bitches, I will really kill you.
Wow.
Said Duterte, 71 years old. He's a former prosecutor. He said this at a rally. He said, I have no patience. I have no middle ground. Either you kill me or I will kill you idiots. He's known for jokes about sex and rape, talking about his Viagra-fueled sexual escapades. He's threatened to dismiss the Philippine Congress and form a revolutionary government if he is confronted with uncooperative legislators. Outgoing President Benigno Aquino III tried to discourage Filipinos from voting for Duterte over fears that the mayor may endanger the country's hard-fought democracy and squander economic gains of the last 6 years, when the Philippine economy grew at an average of 6.2%, one of the best in Asia. Meanwhile, in the vice presidential race, Senator Ferdinand Marcos Jr., the son of the former dictator who ruled the Philippines from 72 until he was ousted in 86 in a people-powered revolt, he leads with 12.6 million votes in the unofficial count. Vice presidents are elected separately from presidents in the Philippines. Aquino warned that Duterte could be a dictator in the making. Could be a dictator in the making, urge voters not to support him. Filipinos have been hypersensitive to potential threats to democracy since they ousted the elder Marcos. But apparently there are not all that hypersensitive, because it looks like Duterte is going to win. There are 100 million people in the nation of the Philippines, which I did not realize. A lot of them are apparently looking for radical change at the top. Sound familiar?
Certainly does, and not in a good way.
Duterte tapped into that discontent, pledging to end crime in half a year, even though police said it was impossible.
Well, it depends on what tactics you use.
Yeah, well, apparently. He has not articulated an overall foreign policy, but when the Australian and U.S. ambassadors criticized a joke that he made... And it's true. He made this joke, and then he said it wasn't a joke about wanting to be the first to have raped an Australian missionary who was gang raped and killed by inmates in a 1989 jail riot. When Australian and U.S. Diplomats criticized him for that, he told them to shut up. Analysts predicted that a Duterte win would weaken the Philippine peso. Due to his economic platform, and those jitters have affected the stock market. It fell on Friday, the last day before Monday's election holiday, for the 10th time in 11 days. Political science professor Richard Hedarian of De La Salle University in Manila said that Duterte is completely out of the system. He's out of the box. He said in the mayor's portrayal of social problems, there's a gap between the rhetoric and reality, but it is working. It's creating panic among a lot of people and rallying them behind Duterte, who now looks like he will be, in fact, the next president of the Philippines. Sound familiar? Sound worrying? Well, it should. A couple of quick polling items before we get to a break, which underscores all of the above. PPP is out with a new poll. Showing that Hillary Clinton is currently defeating Donald Trump nationally by 4 points. Just 4 points, I should add, 42 to 38. Meanwhile, in that same PPP poll, Bernie Sanders defeats Donald Trump by 10 points. And one of the reasons I'm pointing to this particular poll is to give credit, kudos to PPP, because they have now started including other candidates in their head-to-head general election matchups, I should say. Gary Johnson for the Libertarian Party and Jill Stein for the Green Party, both likely to be the nominees for those two parties. In both cases, in the case of Hillary beating Trump by 4 points, the Libertarian Gary Johnson gets 4 points, Jill Stein gets 2, and in the case where Sanders beats Donald Trump by 10 points, Gary Johnson, he loses a point, he gets 3%, and Jill Stein also loses a point, she gets just 1%. But you know what? Good for PPP for starting to include all of the candidates who may be running in their polling. That said, we don't have national elections in this country. We have an electoral college, and a very few states, frankly, in that college that end up determining who will become the president of the United States. A very few states that the candidates must win if they hope to win the presidency. Well, now we've got some more disturbing polls along those lines in three of those key swing states. And this is a poll from a very good pollster, the Quinnipiac University poll. This poll finds that in both Florida and Pennsylvania, which are key states for Democrats, Clinton leads Trump by just 1 point. She leads Trump 43% to 42%. Remember all those Democrats who are giddy about Donald Trump being the nominee for the Republican Party? Remember all the warnings I told you about not being quite so giddy? This is another one. So Hillary Clinton leads by just 1 point in Florida and Pennsylvania, according to the Quinnipiac poll. And she is losing by 4 points to Donald Trump in the state of Ohio. Donald Trump currently has 43% to Hillary Clinton's 39% in the swing state of Ohio. Now, when it comes to Bernie Sanders in that same head-to-head matchup, well, in Florida, where Clinton leads Trump by 1 point, Sanders leads Trump by just 2 points. But he still leads and leads by a little bit more. In Pennsylvania, where Clinton leads Trump by 1 point, Sanders leads Trump by 6 points. So there's that. In Ohio, where Hillary Clinton is losing to Donald Trump by 4 points, guess what? Bernie Sanders is beating Donald Trump by 2 points. Little something the voters may want to keep in mind as they head to the polls in West Virginia today, as they head to the polls next week in Kentucky and Oregon, and then in a couple of weeks after that, out here in California, New Jersey, and elsewhere. All right, a quick break, and we are back with a maddening story about how Democrats, yes, Democrats, are working hard to help ensure that hundreds of thousands of Americans will unnecessarily die. Yeah, you heard me right. I'm Brad Friedman. This is your Bradcast. Stay tuned.
They said someday you'll find all who love are blind. Oh, when your heart's on fire, you must realize smoke gets in your eyes.
All right, welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com with you here. Late last week, the FDA announced a new rule from the Food and Drug Administration concerning electronic cigarettes, and that they will now be regulated much like tobacco cigarettes, and their sale to children will be banned. This is according to the new rule issued last Thursday. Under the new rule, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration would have to approve all tobacco products not currently regulated that hit stores after February of 2007. Of course, the e-cigarette industry was virtually non-existent prior to February 2007. The Tobacco Control Act of 2009 sets that date of February 2007 as the latest date by which all tobacco products would have to be grandfathered in. Mitch Zeller, head of the FDA's Center for Tobacco Products, has said publicly that he could choose a later date, that he could not choose a later date, but industry officials disagree with him on that score. That means that nearly every e-cigarette on the market and every different flavor and nicotine level would require a separate application for federal approval. Each application could cost $1 million or more, according to Jeff Steyer, an e-cigarette advocate with the National Center for Public Policy Research, and according to other industry officials. This is just absolutely amazing. By way of full disclosure, I was a smoker for years, for decades, frankly, and e-cigarettes, what we prefer to call vaping, using electronic vaporizer devices, got me off of cigarettes literally overnight, and I haven't turned back for years. The idea that the government officials here are going to make it more difficult for people to quit smoking by moving to vaping is something that absolutely makes my blood boil, particularly with some half a million Americans. Never mind around the world, just in America alone, half a million Americans die from diseases related to cigarette smoking, not to use of nicotine, but to cigarette smoking in this country. Half a million Americans. And we could stop that with e-cigs or vaping. Now, that is, unless officials, federal officials, state officials, and city officials, unless they keep making it harder and harder for people to switch to these far safer products. And they are, in fact, far safer. Scientists have found this again and again and again. Most recently, just days ago, April 28, 2016, this is a report from the Tobacco Advisory Groups of the Royal College of Physicians in the UK. The Royal College of Physicians in the UK, which is giving advice to the UK government, which is also considering various regulations on the use of e-cigarettes. All right, what they say, a couple of key recommendations before I get to my guest here. Royal College of Physicians says that smoking is the biggest avoidable cause of death and disability and social inequality in health in the UK. They say that people smoke because they are addicted to nicotine, but they are harmed by other constituents of tobacco smoke. Provisions of the nicotine that smokers are addicted to without the harmful components of tobacco smoke can prevent most of the harm from smoking. Until recently, nicotine products such as patches and gums and so forth, and by the way, inhalers, have been marketed as medicines to help people quit. But e-cigarettes are proving much more popular than those nicotine reduction therapy devices, and they're proving more popular as a substitute and a competitor for actual tobacco cigarettes. There are concerns that e-cigarettes will increase tobacco smoking by renormalizing the act of smoking, acting as a gateway to smoking in young people. However, the Royal College of Physicians points out, to date, there is no evidence that any of these processes is actually occurring to any significant degree in the UK. Rather, the available evidence to date indicates that e-cigarettes are being used almost exclusively as safer alternatives to smoked tobacco by confirmed smokers who are trying to reduce harm to themselves or others from smoking or to quit smoking completely. The Royal College of Physicians goes on to say that a regulatory strategy should, therefore, encourage smokers to use the e-cigarette products instead of tobacco. In the interests of public health, they say it is important to promote the use of e-cigarettes and other non-tobacco nicotine products as widely as possible as a substitute for smoking in the UK. Yet, here in the US, federal regulators appear to be doing quite the opposite. And I can't tell you, of all the things we cover on the broadcast, and I'm perhaps easily riled up by them, I can't tell you how much this has me riled up in a way that I'm going to try to contain myself as I welcome my guest here. I'll let him get riled up for me. Chris Hughes is the owner of the Fat Cat Vapor Shop in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, and he's president of the Pennsylvania chapter of the Smoke-Free Alternatives Trade Association. Chris Hughes, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Hi, Brad. Thanks for having me on today.
Great to have you here. I've spoken to you over the years, Chris, about concerns about these regulations, about vaping. You've given me some fine advice over the years. And I know that you're almost as troubled by these regulations now as I am, perhaps more so. Give me an idea. What will this new rule that the FDA is getting ready to finalize here, or perhaps has already been finalized, what will this new rule require? And then we can talk about what the practical effects will be on businesses like yours and on the vaping industry overall, and even on big tobacco.
Sure. Well, Brad, first of all, it's a very complicated piece of regulatory law. It's about 500 pages long. And what some things that we have been able to discern from it so far is that within 90 days, they will be it will be illegal to sell these products to minors, which is great. I fully support minor bans. And in fact, that's kind of a testament to how up-to-date the FDA is in releasing this rule, because currently it's against the law in 48 of 50 states for minors to purchase these products. My state and Michigan are the only two. Michigan, it's still legal for a child to buy an e-cigarette because the American Cancer Society, mm-hmm. Heart Association, and Lung Association lobbied Governor Snyder last year to veto a very popular bipartisan measure that would have done just that.
So you're not troubled by banning it for minors the way cigarettes are banned for minors. You're cool with that part of the FDA's rule.
I feel very strongly that these are products for adults, whether they contain nicotine or not. I know the National Institute of Drug Abuse released data in December indicating that the youth vaping rate had actually gone down by about 5% this year. But more importantly, that 80% of the youth that were using these products were using nicotine-free products. Personally, I think if that is allowed, it creates obvious enforcement issues.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want a law enforcement officer or somebody that would be trying to enforce a prohibition on a child having one to have to somehow test it on the spot to see if it contained nicotine. So we think that these products are really just for adults and primarily for adult smokers.
And to be clear, for those people who aren't familiar with vaping and e-cigarettes, you get to, unless you buy the ones that are largely made by the big tobacco companies, most of the folks using these vaping products out there can choose their own juice. We call it juice. This comes in thousands of different flavors, different nicotine levels, including zero nicotine levels. So what you're saying is some kids are getting these vaping devices and using them to vape, even though there's no nicotine in them whatsoever. And you suggest that's bad because law enforcement, you can't know. It doesn't have a sign on it whether there is nicotine in this particular juice or not, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, something else to consider when talking about youth vaping is that as this trend in youth vaping did increase mm-hmm. for over several years, that youth smoking has actually fallen mm-hmm. to the lowest level. I believe they just came out with new numbers, and I believe it's 8%. That's by far the lowest number that youth smoking rate has ever been in the time that records have been kept, by far.
Which would seem to me to be an argument in favor of vaping. I know that you're against it for kids. My thinking, and of course I know what I was like when I was a kid, my thinking was kids are going to smoke. Kids are going to smoke cigarettes. I would rather make it easier for them to vape a much safer device than cigarettes. But okay, I'm nothing if not willing to compromise. If we have to pretend that we're going to keep them from kids, so be it. But keeping them from adults, which is likely to be the practical effect of this FDA law, this FDA rule, is quite another matter. So what effect, setting aside the age of business, what effect will this requirement now on all people who make, I guess, e-juice, as we call it, or the hardware that is used to go through a federal regulatory process that could cost $1 million per what? Per flavor? Per nicotine level? Per everything?
Yeah, before we even get to that, Brad, the other two things that go into effect in 90 days are a sampling ban. So that means, I know you've been to shops. I'm not sure if any of mm-hmm. your listeners have ever been to a vape shop, but traditionally when you go in, there's a mechanism there for you to taste the e-liquid. Usually it's very low nicotine mm-hmm. or no nicotine.
Right.
The FDA is attempting to ban that. And the other thing that it appears they want to put in place in 90 days is a total freeze on the market. So in 90 days, after 90 days, it is illegal to introduce a new vapor product onto the market.
It would be illegal to introduce any new vapor product after 90 days? You mean,
yeah, that would be a flavor, a strength, anything. New nicotine strength, a new device, yeah. Yeah, that appears to be the case. So They're trying to get everything under control so they can look at where it's at. Now, with respect to the pre-market tobacco application.
Well, Chris, let me just ask you. You're saying it would be illegal unless they go through this process that could cost $1 million to get approved. Is that right?
Yeah, but no. But the reality is that nobody has money to go through that process. The application process is so onerous that I know Jeff Steyer, you mentioned, Jeff is actually a good friend of mine. Jeff is mentioning at least $1 million. But the more realistic estimates that I've heard for the cost of that application process is $5 to $9 million. And that would indeed be for every flavor of e-liquid and then every subsequent strength of that, nicotine strength of that liquid. So if there were four of those, the minimum cost to get that one e-liquid approved is $20 million. There is no requirement by the FDA, if a company had the money and did that work, to actually accept their application. They have refused to accept many applications for various reasons. So, and then if they do accept the application, they are under no pressure to approve it. You know? So you could have spent $20 million. I mean, a small business could have gone out and, you know, mortgaged their house and their property and everything to get the money just to get one e-liquid flavor, and the FDA would cavalierly just keep, you know, I don't want to say keep their money, because the money, to clarify something, the money doesn't go to the FDA. That is the cost to the business for attorneys and scientists that would prepare that report for you.
Well, you say, Chris Hughes, that there is that nobody has that kind of money, they can't afford, that this will effectively kill the industry, but that's not entirely true. In fact, the big tobacco companies who have been reluctantly but are now getting into this e-cig game, and they all the big tobacco companies, I think, now have their own version of an e-cig, and by the way, they're terrible. The ones I've tried early on, I tried and went right back to smoking because they were so bad. Unlike the mom and pop shops that are putting out actually good products. But the big tobacco, they can afford a $1 million application process for their products, can't they? Will the end result here be that shops like yours and products that are actually made by people who hate big tobacco, they'll be put out of business? And big tobacco will be right back in the catbird seat where they have been for decades in this country.
Well, yes and no, Brad. I mean, if you look at the price of those cig-like products, and that's what for anyone that's listening that isn't familiar with that term, cig-likes are a small, like usually disposable e-cigarette device that just looks like a cigarette. That's the typical type of product that the large tobacco companies make. If you consider the cost currently to the consumer of those products, they're really, depending on what municipality you live in, oftentimes more expensive than smoking.
Right.
So let's not feel sorry for the tobacco industry or anything, but if they had to absorb millions and millions of dollars in application costs to get those products approved, obviously that price is going to need to be reflected in a new retail, higher retail. And that the elasticity of the marketplace may not be able to accept that. What if it was $15 for a cig-like device that lasted you all day? And, I mean, it's easy for us to attack the tobacco companies, and to a great extent we should, but something that I've always found odd is that they've made these products that are so deadly for so long, and when they've tried to come out to market with a product that is much less harmful, they also get attacked for that.
Well,
does that make sense?
Well,
I mean, shouldn't we be praising them for trying to participate in that market
Some extent? Well, to some extent, fair enough. If those products that they made were better, the non-tobacco products were better, I might feel differently about it. But the scenario you underscore, Chris Hughes, shows the price of the cig-alikes that the tobacco companies make going up through the roof. And then guess what? Those of us who are addicted to nicotine, Well, if we can't afford those products, it's just back to smoking cigarettes again, back to the cancer sticks that so many of us have been able to get away from in the first place. I mean, that's what makes me absolutely... Actually, here's what makes me the craziest about all of this, Chris, is that the people, the advocates that I hear in this country, the you know, that are putting up these misleading television commercials showing children you know, with their e-cig products and so forth, those are the same people who have successfully done a good job of getting cigarettes more and more out of our society. They are supposed enemies of cigarettes and the tobacco industries, and those are the very same people who are making it harder for people like me and millions of others who are addicted to nicotine to get these products. So, you know, and so a lot of times it's Democrats, people who I would otherwise agree with. I had a city councilman on this show a year or so ago, who I probably agree with on everything, had him on the day after the LA City Council had banned e-cigarettes indoors, forcing, you know, people who had quit smoking to go out and hang out with the cigarette smokers. A caller called in and said that's like, you know, sending a cocaine addict to, you know, to hang out with crack addicts in a crack house or something. I'm sorry. I'm off on a rant. Help me out.
No,
here,
it is saddening, and you know, I'll say, you know, to identify myself, because your callers obviously aren't familiar with me. You know, I'm a 51 years old, and I was a lifelong Democrat. I mean, my first experience voting in a presidential election, I voted for Walter Mondale against Ronald Reagan in 1984. I went on to be involved in Democratic activism, political campaigns, donations. And that culminated in 2008 when my wife and I actually housed an Obama volunteer from another state and his fiance for 2 months in my house during the 2008 election. My views on Democrats have quite frankly changed, and it's become kind of a journey, just because federally, particularly in the United States Senate, I have heard so many despicable lies come from the mouths of senators, and I can, you know, Dick Durbin is one of them. These are people that I used to go on Crooks and Liars and give money to through the project or Blue
Act
America,
Blue.
Whatever it was.
Yeah,
Sherrod Brown is another one of them. Mm-hmm. Senator Markey from Massachusetts, Jeff Merkley from Oregon, Barbara Boxer, and Diane Feinstein.
Some of the
most
progressive Democrats out there are doing this, are behind this. What is the reason? Is this because of Big Pharma, because they get money from Big Pharma, which, by the way, has a huge nicotine? You know, when people talk about, oh, nicotine's bad for you, guess what? Big Pharma sells nicotine like crazy in their gums, in their patches that are advertised on TV. What the hell is the reason? Why aren't they listening to the science and the scientists, these very same Democrats who are correctly critical of Republicans for not listening to science on climate change? Those same Democrats are not listening to science when it comes to something that could save 500,000 lives a year in these United States.
It's a mystery. Some of it, Brad, is money, I'm sure, and political contributions. I know we have one state senator, Mark Leno, from San Francisco, out in your way in California, that's caused a tremendous amount of problem. And he was basically, I would consider him to be the prime force between the situation you are in the state of California right now with the bills that Governor Brown just signed. But also, it's ideology. You know, I mean, I have had two sitting U.S. senators, and I'll name both of them on the show tonight, that have literally told friends of mine that are small business owners, that own small vapor businesses, have told them to their face, I want to wipe you out. And one of them is Senator Elizabeth Warren from Massachusetts, and the other was Senator Durbin from Illinois.
Wow.
They told my friends, Senator Warren, it was at an open house at her office in Springfield, Massachusetts, her district office, and with Senator Durbin, it was in Washington, D.C. That's been in the last 2 months.
And I take no joy in calling out those, you know, people like that, senators like that, for doing exactly what it is that Republicans claim they do. Generally, Republicans are lying about it when they say, oh, they're Democrats want to, you know, regulate your life, put people out of business. Here, they are actually doing it. And someone like Elizabeth Warren, for whom I have so much respect, to do something like this, it feels to me like she just must not understand the science, must not actually read the scientific reports that I'm reading out there. I mean, do you get the sense that she knows what the hell she's doing when she makes this call, or is she being misinformed by people in the industry, whether it's, you know, big tobacco, big pharma, or big anti-tobacco, who are afraid that e-cigs are going to somehow lead to the normalization of smoking again, which is ridiculous in and of itself.
Well, in a sense, Brad, it's partly on the industry for not being active enough early enough in getting out and educating legislators as business owners and counter the information they're getting. I would say that most of the information that these people, the one thing they have in common is they're probably all very close to the American Cancer Society. The American Cancer Society obviously is funded to some extent by the same giant pharmaceutical corporations that make nicotine patches, lozenges, and gums, and view my business and thousands of other small businesses in the country as competitors. The ACS spent, so you guys know, the American Cancer Society Action Network, spent last year lobbying in Washington, D.C., $3.6 million in the first three quarters of last year. I would assume that most of that lobbying money spent was spent to advance this rule that came out last Thursday.
Well,
so that's something to wrap your mind about with regard to the American Cancer Society. I've come to view them as a really horrible organization. There was a tremendous article put out in the International Journal of Drug Abuse recently that was co-written by David Sweener, who's an anti-smoking activist from Canada, and a professor who I'm drawing a blank in his name from the University of Buffalo. And that article said that these public health groups, some of us have taken to calling them public harm groups, are specifically concealing differential risk information from consumers in the United States on these products, that they understand and know that they are vastly, dramatically less harmful. All of the science would seem to indicate that, than smoking, yet they continue to fight for them to be essentially banned. And this rule will ban them. I mean, in small businesses, looks like would be 3 years from today if something isn't done legislatively or judicially.
Chris, I am seething with rage. I got to tell you, because I, you know, I'm familiar with what a group of 53 leading scientists sent a letter to the World Health Organization. This was last year. Actually, this was 2014, warning them that e-cigarettes are part of the solution in the fight against smoking, not part of the problem. They write, these products could be among the most significant health innovations of the 21st century, perhaps saving hundreds of millions of lives. The urge to control and suppress them as tobacco products should be resisted, they wrote to the World Health Organization. And then you have the Cancer Society, like you suggest, Chris, seemingly saying otherwise. Is there evidence? Are you aware of any evidence? I've tried to read the reports that I can. People misunderstand. They think that nicotine leads to cancer. It ain't the nicotine. It's all the crap in the cigarettes that kills you, the combustion, the burning, the chemicals. Are you familiar with, does nicotine cause cancer?
I don't think it's not really considered to cause cancer. There's a famous quote out there that people smoke for the nicotine but die for the tar.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's also a good bit of scientific information out there that would indicate that nicotine that is taken, inhaled in the form from an electronic cigarette or a vapor product, is actually less addictive than nicotine from a combustible cigarette. And there's a lot of reasons for that. There are over 7,000 chemicals in cigarette smoke, and many of them act in concert with nicotine to make it more addictive. And if there's also, to some extent, when you're smoking combusting tobacco with nicotine in it, It's creating a certain amount of what's called freebase nicotine. I don't know if anyone's old like me and remembers Richard Pryor when people used to freebase cocaine in the 80s.
Yeah.
That's basically that same process can happen to a certain percentage of the nicotine molecules in a cigarette when they're combusted.
Well,
so, you know, you get nicotine a lot faster through smoking.
And there's no evidence that I am familiar with of anyone who has died from vaping. Lots of people died from smoking, but no evidence died from vaping other than one guy I had read about who actually tried to kill himself, and he shot up with the juice. He actually shot, used a needle to shoot it into him in order to kill himself. That's the only death that I'm familiar with.
Well,
tied to vaping.
There is one death of a child, an 18-month-old, that was in upstate New York about a year ago, Brad. And that child, I know there's some organizations out there like to hold that up as a thing, but the child did not die as a result of exposure to finished e-liquid product, which is a very dilute mixture of nicotine. That child died because the parents mixed their own e-liquid and they left the guardians there. Apparently there was a jar or a bottle of very high-strength nicotine concentrate sitting on a low coffee table, and they turned their back and the child got access to it. And that high-strength nicotine can be dangerous because it's transdermal. So effectively, if the FDA bans the legal sale of all these products and makes it a federal crime, people will be making their own. And the number of households that will have that nicotine concentrate that could be potentially dangerous, and it would skyrocket. There'll be more stories like that, unfortunately.
You're right, and they're creating a black market here. More kids, as I understand it, die from eating cigarettes and household cleaners than have ever been killed from vaping. We got just a minute or two left. Chris Hughes, owner of the Fat Cat Vapor Shop in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. I hope that folks listening on our Pennsylvania affiliate out there try to help Chris out at the shop. But what will this do directly to your business? Will this put you out of business if this moves forward as it's currently planned, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, this plan, if it's fully implemented in 3 years and full compliance is required, it will close every vape shop like mine in the United States. And the only other thing that we could say certainly will happen is smoking rates will skyrocket again across all demographics. There's 9 million adults currently, over 9 million adults using these products regularly in the U.S., and those people will seek an alternative product. They're on an alternative. The alternative for them may be to go back to smoking in many instances. And half of those people will die prematurely as a result of smoking.
And
that's the catastrophe.
It would be a catastrophe. If you know someone, even if you're, and this is one of the reasons I'm covering this issue, because it is not being covered. And I know a lot of people are listening. They're not smokers. But they need to know, A, what's going on, and B, I'm sure they know smokers. They know smokers. This ought to be a segment about the miracle that is vaping and how people can, you know, help their mom or their dad or their sister or their brother or their someone they go to work with, how they can help them move to vaping. Instead, we're talking about the idea of people who have already moved to vaping going back to cigarettes. So what is it that people can do, Chris Hughes, to somehow help in this fight? Is there a place to go? Is there something that they can do to help change the equation on this? Because, boy, if you got even the Democrats, behind this scheme, this is going to be one hell of a tough fight.
Well, I agree. And something that consumers can do, whether they vape or not, is if they're interested and believe that adults should retain access to these products, they can join a group called CASAA, the Consumer Advocates for Smoke-Free Alternatives Association. I believe the website is CASAA.org. And if you are represented in the Senate by any of the people whose names I cited, please don't hesitate to call their office and tell them that you think that politely, always politely, but tell them that you feel very strongly that the senators should reevaluate their stance on vapor products.
Yes, please do. Please do, because there's a lot of people who are going to die I don't want to sound like those Republicans out there, but this is a case where people are going to die if this happens. Just incredible. So CASAA.org. Go let them know. Let your voice be heard on this. Even if you're not a smoker, you got loved ones who are. And this is insane. This is madness. Chris Hughes, owner of the Fat Cat Vapor Shop in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, president of the Pennsylvania chapter of the Smoke-Free Alternatives Trade Association. Good luck with the fight, Chris. Let us know what we can do here at the broadcast to help you out any way that we can. And you know what? It's selfish. I want to help myself out because I don't want to go back to those goddamn deadly cigarettes. And if the government forces me to, I ain't going to be happy about it. Hey, thank you, Chris, and good luck with the fight, my friend.
Thanks for having me, Brad, and I'll be in touch.
Thank you, brother. Wow. All right. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll come back with more Bradcast right after this. I'm Brad Friedman. Stay tuned. You know, it's never a good sign when I have to count on the Green News reports to calm me down.
To make
That's
you
never,
feel a little better.
Yeah, yeah, never a good sign.
This is true.
Chris Hughes, thanks again to him. He mentioned during the break there, he said that he was so disappointed with Democrats that had he known what they would eventually do, he would have never spent all of those years passing out anti-Bush, anti-Iraq war CDs throughout all of the Bush years. Just in case you think, he's one of these, libertarians, right-wingers, pushing for vape. No, this guy, has been on the right side politically. Frankly, I'd like to think, as have I. And yet we got to call him out. Elizabeth Warren? Really? Really? Yeah, apparently, really. All right, so let's get to it. This will calm me down, right?
I hope so.
Our latest Green News Report.
As the wildfire burns into a second week, it looks set to become the costliest natural disaster in Canada's history.
Cooler weather slows growth of Canada's catastrophic oil sands region fire. U.S. officials warn the western snowpack is melting at record speed. Mobil Oil's CEO tried to warn of climate change back in 1982. Plus,
I do think that there's a lot more room for agreement on climate change between conservatives and liberals than is often made out in the media.
More Republicans accept climate change than ever before.
Yeah, we'll see. All of those stories and more straight ahead. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
2014 was the warmest year ever. Until 2015 became the warmest year ever. Now 2016 might turn out to be even warmer than either of those. You know what climate change is real? When the hottest year on record is whatever year it currently is.
Ooh, Jimmy Kimmel said that on ABC television. He gonna get in trouble. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, the pictures coming in from Fort McMurray up there in Alberta, Canada, continue to be jaw-dropping. The devastation for miles is just incredible.
Yes, luckily cooler temperatures and light rain have slowed the growth of the fire, but officials say that it could be months before that fire is entirely extinguished. Officials estimate some 2,400 structures have been destroyed. That's according to the latest count. The fire already ranks as one of the worst natural disasters in Canada's history, with preliminary estimates of economic losses estimated to be as much as $9 billion, not just from insurance losses, but also the hit to Alberta's economy from having to curb tar sands oil production, from which Alberta gets a significant portion of its revenue.
And it would be irresponsible if we did not point out that the fire right smack dab in the middle of Canada's tar sands oil region is because of the extraordinarily hot and dry weather that is directly tied to climate change.
And scientists say the wildfire problem will continue to get worse as the planet planet warms. Wildfire season is already now 2 months longer than it was back in the 1970s. Here in the U.S., the Federal Natural Resources Conservation Service is warning of another intense fire season here, announcing over the weekend that in the western United States, the snowpack that had built up because of El Nino is already rapidly melting out at, quote, record speed. From Alaska to Washington to Wyoming, the service says snowpack is melting so quickly that flooding is a possibility in some areas in the short term, and warning that in the long term, intense wildfires will follow this summer as the forests dry out earlier.
And that's also bad news for those of us out here in the West amidst this historic drought in Southern California and elsewhere in the West.
Meanwhile, in politics,
global warming and that, a lot of it's a hoax. It's a hoax. I mean, it's a money-making industry, okay? It's a hoax.
Presumptive Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump has said that climate change is a hoax, but a new poll shows he's out of step with a growing majority of Republican voters. According to a new survey from Yale and George Mason University, 47% of conservative Republicans now believe that global warming is happening. That's a 19 percentage point jump in just the last 2 years. The survey found two-thirds of American voters support funding research into renewable energy and policies to cut emissions. But the researchers also found that most of those surveyed don't know about the overwhelming consensus on climate change among the world's scientists. That's including Democrats. Less than 20% are aware that 97% of climate scientists agree climate change is man-made. That could be helped if we talked about it more, according to CNN environment columnist John Sutter in an interview on the broadcast.
A pretty large majority of Americans never discuss global warming, or almost never discuss it. One important message that we've gotten from, you know, these ongoing surveys is that we need to talk about this more, and we need to talk about it not just on the news, but, you know, with each other, you know, at family dinners, that sort of thing. I mean, it sounds hokey, but I think that really is the way that you start to open up these conversations.
Another way to open up these conversations, as I mentioned to John Sutter when I interviewed him, is if CNN itself was talking about it more. Yeah, he's talking about it on the website, but on air, good luck finding conversation about climate change on CNN.
Finally, new evidence has emerged that Exxon isn't the only oil company that knew burning fossil fuels would cause global warming decades ago, even as it denied it publicly. According to a new report from Inside Climate News, back in 1982, just as the oil industry was beginning to exploit oil deposits like Canada's tar sands in Alberta, the chief executive of Mobil Oil wrote a published essay warning that burning the tar sands could accelerate dangerous global warming. He said he hoped that federal scientists would figure out a solution. Mobil Oil was later bought by Exxon.
Yeah, just let the federal government deal with it. They'll figure it out. Same people who hate the federal government. Imagine that. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
The more you ignore me, the closer I get. You're wasting your time.
Nah, didn't work, Desi.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Not feeling any better. My thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen, to our booking goddess, Cynthia Cohn, and of course to Chris Hughes of Fat Cat Vapor in Pennsylvania to see what you can do to save lives and save vaping and kill cigarettes. Stop by CASAA.org. Thanks to you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program, download it at bradblog.com. Drop me email if you like. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. Always hear from a lot of people after vaping shows for some odd reason. You can find me and follow me on the Facebooks and the Twitters at TheBradBlog. Use hashtag Bradcast. All right, that's it. Until we meet again, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.